WBEZ is supported by the Gynecology Research Lab at Endeavor Health. Period pain affects millions of people. Researchers want to learn from those experiencing period pain. The NIH-funded study wants to know whether a common over-the-counter medication can reduce period pain over time. Compensation is available. Learn more at cureperiodpain.org.
Chicago, I'm Mary Dixon. I'm in for Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Stick around to the very end of the episode to get a roundup of the day's top headlines in and around Chicago. But first, people in Illinois can play slots, buy lottery tickets, and bet on sports, which is lucrative for the state. Last year, Illinois pulled in more than $2.5 billion in tax revenues. But the Illinois Answers Project reports residents themselves aren't necessarily winning. Just last year, gamers lost nearly $8 billion. So, why is this happening? Are there enough guardrails in place? Who's losing their shirt in this gambling game? At the table, we have Elizabeth Thielen, Senior Director at NICASA. It's a behavioral health services organization specializing in gambling addiction services. And Casey Toner, reporter for the Illinois Answers Project. Casey kicked us off by laying out the kinds of gaming that Illinois adults can engage in.
We're talking about the lottery. We're talking about casinos. We're talking about slot machines. And most recently, we've been talking about sports gambling.
So sportsbook has become more legalized in the state of Illinois in the last few years. You can do it on your phone. It's very easy. And in your reporting last year, Illinoisans lost, not just spent, but lost $7.7 billion, nearly $8 billion in gambling. That's about half of the budget for the city of Chicago. So that's a lot of paychecks to be handing over, no?
Yes, that's a lot of money. And it wasn't always like this. And that's what I think is really interesting. I was 9 years old when the first Riverboat Casino left the shores of Illinois. Now there are 17 casinos. There are 50,000 slot machines, and thanks to bipartisan legislation signed by J.B. Pritzker, there is now sports gambling, which puts the casino in people's pockets.
Yeah, and Elizabeth, I want to ask you now, especially with the addition of sportsbook, you know, gaming on your phone, have you seen more people asking for help with gaming addiction at your organization?
Absolutely. We've seen people coming in at an elevated rate for online sports betting and other forms of online gambling. And we're also seeing an alarming trend of the age trending much younger. So whereas we had people in their 40s, 50s, 30s coming in for services, now it's 30s, 20s, and even teens.
I mean, so then you're talking about teenagers who, you know, probably don't have jobs to at least replenish their resources, right, and they need to lean on mom and dad.
Right.
You know, if mom and dad know about it.
Absolutely. And it's something that's really not on people's radar. I know, you know, parents and school administrators are concerned about substance use, vaping, all of that. And gambling is not on the radar, but it needs to be because it's happening in the classrooms, in the locker rooms, in colleges, in dorms, all of that.
Casey, why would you say that gambling is on the rise?
It's on the rise because the state of Illinois has legalized it. And in many ways, I think they've cleared the path for gambling companies to operate. And the gambling companies are taking advantage of that. And right now, there are technologies that are available that did not exist 100 years ago. There are algorithms. You know, there's the gamification of everything, really, that I think is just leading to more people placing bets. And again, you just couldn't do this stuff legally, you know, 30 years ago.
When you talk about the gamification of gambling, that, of course, reminds me of the prediction markets like Kelshi and was it Polymarket, like where you're betting on almost anything in the world, which is not necessarily legal in Illinois. And there is some pushback against their sports betting on those prediction markets. But actual sports gaming is legal here now.
Yes, actual sports betting is legal, and you can do it from your phone. And this presents a lot of challenges for people, especially people who are problem gamblers. We spoke to a man in Gamblers Anonymous who talked to us about how he lost a bunch of money one week, and he was thinking about telling people about his addiction. And then he got a text from the customer service guy at DraftKings who said that they deposited money into his account. He checks his account, and there's $5,000 there with an option to cash out. And he was telling us that they knew that they could give him $5,000 and they wouldn't lose a cent.
Wow. Is that the guy named Reeve that you start your story with?
It's a different man.
That's a different guy. So can you talk to us a little bit about Reeve's story too?
Yes. Reeve is one of these people who very sadly kind of grew up in this house of gambling where his father would take him and his family to the horse tracks. And he says he was kind of raised by the horse tracks. And when he had a good day at the tracks, things would be all right. But when it was a bad day, you know, things would spiral to abuse. And this is the last life that Reeve wanted to live. Mm. But what happened is, you know, after the pandemic, sports betting gets legalized. And he's watching his favorite team, the Chicago Cubs. And he sees a little ad scroll across the bottom of the screen, $5 bets. And he does it. And the next thing he knows, he's spending all of his time, all of his money on gambling. And he estimates, you know, going through several hundred thousands of dollars and blowing the nest egg that was meant for a house that he was going to buy with his husband. And, you know, eventually he, you know, kind of came to and he realized he had a problem and he went to Gamblers Anonymous. And now, you know, he spends a lot of his time trying to tell people about, you know, what this is doing to people in Illinois.
And as you write, Reeve says that point where he lost his nest egg, someone who really was dead set against developing any kind of gambling habit, he feels this is where the state could have stepped in, right?
Yes, yes. He, you know, he's talked about the advertising that exists. You know, he mentioned this free play that scrolled across the bottom of the screen. And he's right. I mean, the state of Illinois, the politicians in Illinois, the lawmakers, they're the ones that are responsible. They can change how this industry looks, right? They said it's legal, but they can change how it looks and how it's advertised and how it's marketed to people and how people use it.
So, for example, if I'm watching a baseball game, which I do frequently, or the World Cup, which I'm kind of doing too, there are ads all over the place for gaming platforms. But if I want to run to the corner and buy a pack of cigarettes, there are no ads for cigarettes on TV. And there are very strict rules about ads for liquor. For example, if there's a beer commercial, you don't see people actually drinking beer. Is this the kind of regulation that Reeve and others are talking about, Casey?
Yes, it's one of the many things that they've talked about. Because it's true. At this point, the same advertising space in sports stadiums that used to be occupied by cigarette ads are now occupied by gambling ads. And other countries have fixed some of this. I believe in England, they used to allow gambling companies to put their patches on jerseys for soccer players. Mm. But after enough pushback, they decided to ban that because so many children are watching sports and they see, you know, their favorite soccer strikers and they see the badges on their jerseys, and, you know, one thing leads to another. So other people have taken steps to change this, but in Illinois, you know, things are moving a little bit slower.
Elizabeth, let's talk with you about your story, your personal connection to all of this. It almost sounds like it might be a little bit like Reeve's story. Can you talk to us about that?
Sure. Yeah. I had an early exposure to gambling. My mom married into a family that was very much invested in gambling, and they actually did it, even though they were very intensely involved, they did it in a very controlled way. Mm. I came into it with some vulnerabilities that none of us really realized connected to gambling, which is a family history of addiction. So that early exposure plus that family history, plus I was an athlete and ended up having a career-ending injury, all of this kind of coalesced into developing some problematic gambling behavior. And I think it's really important here in Illinois, when we have so much access to gambling products, we recognize that we are not all the same. A lot have vulnerabilities that others do not have. And I'm particularly concerned with our emerging adults, our teens, our emerging adults who are extremely talented and smart. And so we see them walking and talking and doing amazing things. And we think, hey, they can navigate this safely. Their brains are different than ours. And they're doing some very complex stuff that actually make them very vulnerable to the addictive properties of these products. So it's super important that we fold it into existing prevention programming and concepts, and that families are talking to their young people about gambling just like they do about substances, and that they take advantage of some of the resources that are out there, because Illinois has made some, you know, really important resources available as far as prevention and treatment, and they can all be accessed by schools and parents, and we need to connect those dots there.
Not to say that teenagers always make great choices, right, but it does seem like decades of information about cigarette smoking, mm-hmm, tobacco, alcohol, younger kids today, teenagers today, generally are less likely to engage in those kinds of behaviors. But there's really not that discussion, as you're saying, Elizabeth, about gaming.
Right. Yet. Absolutely. If you see what is coming across all of our feeds, our social media feeds, we see a high potential for reward. That's what we're seeing in the ads, and a low potential for risk. And it's absolutely the inverse. And so young people can make healthy decisions about risky behaviors when they have accurate information. And that's where we need to get more young people involved, get them accessing the research and the stats, and then have them getting involved. Because when we look at the ads, again, what's coming across their feeds are young people who are using prediction markets and even making fraudulent ads that show, hey, I did this and I won all this money. And they're being paid by, you know, an industry that is capitalizing on what we know works with youth, that peer influence. So let's get young people influencing their peers to go, hey, this is maybe not for us. Like, let's not be tricked.
If you or someone you know is struggling with gambling, you can call 1-800-GAMBLER or text ILGAMB to 833-234. Casey, in your reporting, have you found who is most at risk or vulnerable to the gaming industry here, who's losing the most money?
It kind of runs the gamut, which is something that I found is really interesting. Of course, there's issues if there is, you know, if it runs in the family, if addiction runs in the family. But really, there's all kinds of people who are getting, you know, sucked up into this. Me and my partner, Maggie Doherty of Capital News Illinois, we spent a lot of time at Gamblers Anonymous meetings. And there are a lot of people who are professionals who were there. And especially what we saw most of all was young men, mm-hmm, like rooms that used to have three or four people, you know, people who have struggled with casinos or the horse tracks. But now there are entire rooms full of people, and they're mostly young men.
Elizabeth, what would you say to someone who's struggling with gaming, or if they have a young person in their house who is struggling with it?
I would say reach out. And I would say reach out before, you know, like, let's put some preventative measures in place. And if there is harm being experienced, reach out. Addiction is just one of the potential harms that can come from gambling in an uninformed way. So, like, let's get the information out to people. It's never too late to connect to care. And if you are one of those people that just finds that you are experiencing harm, and you see the commercials and you see other people and they're having fun or they're making money, you know, what is your experience? It's okay to opt out.
What safeguards, Elizabeth, would you think would help to prevent gambling among young people? What guardrails would you like to see put up?
I would like to see better age verifications from the regulated products. At the same time, there are unregulated products. They have absolutely no scruples. Not only are they letting young people bet, when young people place bets without actual money, so they're offering them credit, and they lose, they are then cyber-stalking them, harassing them, reaching out to family members and threatening them. So it has become a very large criminal enterprise that is preying on young people, college students, high school students, So one thing I recommend for parents, reach out to a provider, go on that areyoureallywinning.com website and look for an outreach provider to learn more. But one of the safeguards we could put in place is blocking software. I think parents of any young person could put blocking software on the young person's device to prevent them from accessing directly these gambling platforms.
And Casey, what are you finding on the state level to curb gambling addictions?
Well, the state under J.B. Pritzker has increased the funding available for the treatment of gambling addictions. It went from $1 million, the allocations went from $1 million to about $15 million, but only $10 million of that is being spent. Mm. And then when you look at what that bucket is, only about $1.5 million is being spent on treating people who are addicted to gambling. And that represents about 6 cents out of every $100 that is brought in state gambling tax revenue. And we spoke to providers who talked about their money actually running out before the end of the fiscal year. And they have to triage the treatment options that are available for people. So I do think that there's an avenue for potentially more money to be spent on helping people.
What are the odds we're going to see any action on this, for example, in the fall veto session, or is this going to have to wait till next spring?
It's hard to say, but I do think that as more and more people are getting caught up in this, as more and more people's children are starting to gamble, I think that this is going to become an issue that is only going to receive, you know, more attention in the years and decades to come.
Elizabeth Thielen is the senior director at NICASA. Where can people find your organization that helps people with addiction disorders?
Yeah, they can go to NICASA.org, which is NICASA.org. They can email gambling@NICASA.org, and that comes to me and my entire team. And, you know, there are telehealth services available. There's services for people who speak Spanish, English, Mandarin. We have groups, individuals, we have women's only groups, we have a young adult group. So there are a lot of resources out there if people will connect. And like you said, 1-800-GAMBLER is a great place to start too.
And Casey Toner at the Illinois Answers Project, what's the web address there?
IllinoisAnswers.org.
If you or someone you know is struggling with gambling, that number is 1-800-GAMBLER. It's a toll-free helpline with trained specialists 24/7 and 365 days a year. For sticking with us. Now we'll turn to the top news stories of the day with WBEZ midday anchor Lisa Labas and WBEZ senior producer Meha Ahmed. Since it's Monday morning, I had to ask about their weekends. Here's Lisa.
Pretty good. Meha, how
Mine
was your
is good.
Weekend?
We talked about the Taste of Chicago on the show several times last week on the news update, and So I finally went.
You'd never gone?
No, I've been a million times. But I haven't been since before COVID. So That was actually it's been a minute.
Well, and then it got moved around. It was moved to September because of the NASCAR races. So Taste of Chicago has been a little bit, you know, whipped around.
And
so
was
back in its rightful place.
Yeah, and I was pleasantly surprised by one of the changes. I don't know when they made this change. I probably should have looked it up. Before, you used to either get a wristband or you used to have to buy tickets to get the food. And it was a bit chaotic. And now they don't do any of that. You just pay right up at the kiosk or whatever.
Oh, that's
right?
Good.
So you don't see you get this rainbow cone for 10 tickets. You get it for $6. So
okay. And you can just tap your card.
Super easy.
Is it cashless now?
I don't know. It seems like the ones I went to were all cashless and you had to use a card. So,
do you have a rainbow cone?
Of course, I had a rainbow cone, and I didn't do the taste of the rainbow. I did the full rainbow cone.
Good for you.
I have never had a rainbow cone.
Okay, there's a rainbow cone stand downstairs in Navy Pier. We're going after this.
I mean,
I feel like I'm a terrible Chicagoan.
You just told us during Morning Edition how you need to eat ice cream.
Okay.
It's good for you.
Yeah, let's go. I'm on my way.
So speaking of weekends, it sounds like there were teenagers in Chicago who also got to, you know, visit Taste of Chicago when a weekend when they might not normally come downtown. Meha, what's up with that?
Yes, about 1,000 Chicago teens spent the day exploring downtown, and this is part of the nonprofit group, My Block, My Hood, My City. They do this annual downtown day. I think this was the fourth year they've done it. And essentially, they get all these teens, predominantly from the South and West Side, and they give them $50 prepaid gift cards and a map to different destinations in the city. Those places include like Navy Pier, museums, and of course, even the Taste of Chicago. And you know, the organizers say the event is sort of designed to break down like financial and social barriers that keep a lot of these kids, you know, from experiencing their own city. So, and also helps them, you know, get a connection and sense of belonging here. Chicago City Council or City Clerk Anna Valencia also spoke to the teens, and she said, this is a direct quote, haters are going to hate, but that teens shouldn't let anyone define what opportunities are available or not available to them.
So why don't we hear a little bit more from what the city clerk, Anna Valencia, had to say.
Do not let your zip code, the school you attend, or anyone in your circle tell you can't do something, okay? Don't let them tell you that you can't be somewhere or can't be something that you want to be.
So just to tie a bow on this, Meha and Lisa, the reason that My Block, My Hood, My City will do this for so many teenagers in Chicago is there are whole neighborhoods of kids who don't feel like they belong downtown.
Right.
And so this is an opportunity for them to come downtown, to have a little money in their pocket, and visit some of the things that lots of people around Chicago go to all the time and think nothing of it. But there are cohorts of folks who are like, oh, you know, I've never been to the Art Institute. I've never seen Millennium Park. This is for them. And it sounds like it was really nice.
Yeah. A lot of the things that you do downtown, you know, they're not free. So
yeah.
And that is one of the barriers that keeps kids from coming down here, including, you know, not great transit options, et cetera. But, you know, I think the $50 gift card is a nice, you know, empowering perk for this group.
Very
right.
Nice.
So it's nice they were able to come over the weekend when it was only hot.
Lisa, it was pleasant.
I understand that we've got another heat wave coming.
I hate to tell you that you're correct. Not just because you're accurate, but it's not going to be pleasant again. Do you remember? Just cast your mind back a couple of weeks when it was so hot and sweaty and gross out. Well, that's coming back. It's going to come back along, though, this time with bad air quality.
Mm.
So if you are a person who has a respiratory issue, maybe you've got, you know, someone who has asthma, it is not a good idea for you to be outdoors very long.
When do we expect this to move in?
Probably tomorrow. There are lots of websites you can check. There's air.gov. There's the EPA has a website. There's it's easy to find, you know, air quality maps online, so you can check, and we'll certainly be keeping you updated in the newscast as well on, you know, where the worst of the worst is when we're talking about dangerous air.
And when it kicks in, there are going to be cooling centers open in Chicago and the suburbs. There has been some argument among advocates for different neighborhoods saying these are only open during business hours and people really need more opportunities to stay cool in the evening hours.
Yeah, it's hot at 5 o'clock when the cooling centers close. And I don't know what city pool hours are. Pools are free if you're going to a park district pool. I don't know what the hours at the pools are, but that's where I would go, you know.
Yeah, so stay tuned.
Yeah, some of the cooling centers do close at 5.
Yeah, a lot of them do.
Not nearly late enough.
Not user-friendly.
Because like I said, I was at the Taste yesterday. It was hot, like almost like unbearably hot, and that was only like 82 degrees yesterday. Mm-hmm, it was unbearably hot until about 7, 8 o'clock.
Yeah, it's no fun.
When it finally started, even the cooling off was like, okay, now it's 78.
And when it gets so hot, it doesn't cool off at night. And that is what really brings us into the danger zone. So this is when you're going to be told to check on your neighbors, check on your pets, make sure that you're drinking water.
Call 311.
All of that stuff. Meha, another story in the news. A prominent Chicago priest and civil rights activist is under investigation again. What's going on with Father Flager?
Yeah, priest Michael Flager has been removed from his ministry at St. Sabina Church. This is following a new allegation of child sex abuse from more than 30 years ago. The Sun-Times is reporting that this marks the fifth accusation against the longtime priest in just 4 years. He was cleared of previous claims. The Archdiocese of Chicago, their independent review board, is currently investigating and Reverend Tulani Magwaza will continue to serve as the parish's pastor until then.
So what has Father Flager had to say about this latest accusation?
He calls this latest one an quote, an absolute lie. He said in a statement that he's been attacked, I mean, from the previous allegations now, due to his public position against gun violence, his opposition against inhumane policies and practices of Donald Trump, and even because of his friendship with Minister Farrakhan. And he said, quote, "I believe this is another attempt and another attack by those who have sought to destroy me for years and another attempt by someone to get money from the Archdiocese to silence me."
So we will continue to follow this story. Again, Father Flager has been accused four previous times of sexual misconduct and has been cleared and restored to the pulpit at St. Sabina. This is another allegation that is now under investigation. Yes. Lisa, I understand someone was charged with trespassing at Governor Pritzker's Gold Coast home.
Sure.
What do we know about this?
Okay, we don't know a ton, but, you know, a person, 4th of July, so a Saturday, jumped the fence, wound up in the Pritzker's backyard. You know, I don't know. Was the governor at home? I don't think so at the time, but due in court later this month, so we will hear more later.
And this is happening as there's more attention on Governor Pritzker.
Right.
There's a lot of talk about him perhaps running for president. He's been making appearances in other states.
Right.
Our colleague Tina Svandelis, who's the Sun-Times national political reporter, was writing about that, and it's in the paper this morning. What are your takeaways?
Well, okay, so we don't know if he's going to run for president. He keeps saying he's just going to run for re-election, most likely. And, you know, his name does keep popping up on these polls of possible candidates. You know, he's been a little outspoken, especially of the Trump administration. And if he did, you know, Tina Svandelis's reporting found that, you know, Pritzker would not self-fund this campaign. The man is a billionaire. Yeah. You know, he's got quite a lot of money. And there's no real timeline for when and if he would announce.
For president.
For
he
president,
is on the ballot
right.
in November for governor.
For governor, yeah.
He'll be running against Darren Bailey, the Republican nominee.
Correct, yep. So, you know, but the veteran pollster, Celinda Lake, says that this whole early polling doesn't mean a whole lot. You know, it's more important to pay attention to is like the early resources. If a candidate has a strong narrative on their record, you know, the enthusiasm locally, that kind of thing. What kind of base do you have? So we'll keep an eye on it.
So he is still our governor. He is on the ballot for November again against Darren Bailey. So and it's bill signing season now that the legislature is done with its work. On Friday, Pritzker signed a bill into law that prevents schools from expelling kindergartners, first and second graders. What problem is this trying to solve?
I have no idea, to be honest with you, Mary, but this legislation was spearheaded by Senate Majority Leader Kimberly Lightford, who does say that students of color are disproportionately suspended and expelled.
That's the problem it's trying to solve.
But yeah. I was not aware that it was children this young. Mm-hmm. That seems nuts to me, you know, and they're being, you know, suspended for their emotional and mental health, right? That's they're missing out on that component of help for them, you know.
Yeah, it's usually like behavioral issues, and you're talking about like 5 and 6 year olds,
you know, and which seems really, really like a bad idea to let anybody go. You know, it's sort of like withholding recess for everybody. We all need recess, right? Expulsions, you know, so this law makes expulsions prohibited for these young students, you know, through second grade, unless it is a required a thing by federal or state law. Also, school districts cannot institute zero tolerance policies that require suspensions or expulsions for specific behaviors, again, unless required by state law. So I think that's a good idea. No zero tolerance. That gets into problems.
Okay. And again, that applies to public schools, I believe.
Sure.
Cannot apply to private schools. It can do what they want. Recently, Time Out released their ranking of the best cities in the world. And once again, Chicago did pretty well.
We did pretty well. We are the fourth most beautiful city in the world, number one in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Take that, Santa Monica.
Mm-hmm.
So Yeah, so this is a poll of 24,000 city dwellers from around the world. Time Out does this, I think, annually. And they consider a lot of factors like green space, walkability, architecture. And we did really well in all those things in the U.S. or compared to our American counterparts in other states. And so we earned the number one spot in across the country and the number four spot across the world. We beat out places like Paris and Lisbon and Rio. Mm-hmm. But we were, so we're number four, and above us is, in the world ranking, is Sydney, Australia, Edinburgh, Scotland, and Cape Town in South Africa. So
number four most beautiful in the world.
I mean, there's a lot of one competition. In the US. Yeah. And I will say, I mean, I haven't been to Sydney and Cape Town, but Edinburgh is very lovely.
Edinburgh is gorgeous.
And actually, I thought, you know, since one of the factors is walkability, I feel like we should have beaten them because...
Really?
Everything... Listen, terrain is not considered enough. And, you know, when things are like...
It is hilly in Edinburgh.
It's hilly. It's high. A lot of stairs. You get tired real quick.
Sure.
We don't get enough credit for the flatness of Chicago.
The flatness.
It is very easy to
That's
walk.
That's right.
We're
my
number
friends.
One since we're flat. I love it.
We're talking about walkability. Well, it is easier to walk when enough. The terrain
you
is go, flat.
Fair enough.
You go anywhere with a mild hill, I'm huffing and a puffing.
Exactly. Sure.
That might say more about me. Lisa, what yes. other stories might you be following?
Okay, I have two stories that I like. Well, one's a necessary story. One's, this is really great, Block Club Chicago reporting today on the Nuestro Chicago Archives. It's documenting everyday Latino history. It wants photos and videos that were taken before 2008, before everyone had a smartphone, before your life was digitally tracked. Block Club Chicago says this will, you know, document this era before that widespread digital shift. The website was launched in May. You can submit photos on Nuestro Chicago Archives Instagram page mm-hmm. or through email. Also, there's a nationwide blood shortage, so make an appointment and donate blood if you are able.
Oh, that's good to know. Okay, thank you, Lisa Labas. And Meha, Illinois scientists are working to protect an endangered turtle here. Yes. What's going on?
Have you heard of the Blanding turtle?
Vaguely.
Yes.
So please remind me.
It's this really cute turtle. It's semi-aquatic. It's got this... domed black shell. It's almost like cartoonishly domed. Mm. And they're mostly, you can find them, they have bright yellow necks. So just underneath, so it's black on top, maybe some yellow freckles on the shell. But if you look underneath its neck, it's bright yellow. Mm. So yeah, they're very adorable. I have never seen them in the wild. I've only ever seen them at the Peggy Notobart Nature Museum. So okay. You can go see them there. But the Tribune reports that this summer, more than 20 scientists headed out in the field for what's called the Blanding's Bowl in Lake County. Participants administered health care to turtles in the wild, which I think is really cute. And it's named for, of course, the Blanding turtle. And there's only about, you know, researchers estimate there are only 500 left in Illinois. This is an endangered state species. Scientists found about 50 during the four-day bowl, 50 turtles. And they face a lot of threats from fungal diseases to viruses. And primarily habitat loss. This is a species that really depends on wetlands. Illinois used to have a lot more wetlands, but we yeah. lost about 90% in the last century or two.
We were built on a marsh, yes. Chicago.
And it really affects, I mean, they really depend on uninterrupted wetland. And like this, you know, it's just the habitat loss has been so tough on this species. So the scientists, including at the Peggy Notobart Museum, this is something that they continue to study and try to help prevent. So there's a lot of work being done to sort of save this species, but, you know, this Blanding Bowl is one of those things to sort of help gain attention to it.
Well, yeah, and everybody look out for those Blanding's turtles, the black shell.
With the yellow necks.
And the yellow necks.
And they're not terribly big. I saw online it's about 7 to 10 inches. And I was looking at my laptop, which is about 12 inches. So it's about smaller
so
than
little.
My laptop. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, WBEZ's Meha Ahmed and Lisa Labas.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Meha Ahmed, and by production assistant Ginny Kim. It was edited by Linnea Dominic. Mary Dixon was today's host. And if you like what you just heard, we hope you join us for more and head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Or subscribe to this feed so you never miss a conversation. Thanks for listening.